Okay, we are covering the 8th verse Lojong. We did the first 4 verses yesterday, and we'll do the 2nd 4 this morning. These are fairly short classes. I know that makes you very unhappy, but they're short anyway. So here we are. This is verse who? 5. Verse what? 5. Some jealous person might do me wrong, insult me, or something of the like. May I learn to take the loss myself and offer them all the gain. Today you're going to get Tibetan whether you want it or not. You don't have to learn it, but I'm doing this. Actually, I discovered 2 things this morning. I was looking over the class that I hadn't noticed before about the Tibetan, which doesn't go into English. It might go into German, but maybe not. And I'm doing this to plant seeds. That's taken in a couple of you already. But we need translators. We need people who are going to be Dharma practitioners who know Tibetan and can translate this from Tibetan into German instead of from English, Tibetan to English to German. And I think you'll find out why in the next couple of minutes. This is important. Okay, say Dakla.
Dakla.
Shengi.
Shengi.
Yeah, we got it. Okay. Traktoki. Shekyur, Lasok, Nirikpe. Okay, the first dak here means self. Now, Thursday night, I told you the story about His Holiness teaching this, right? And here's the first verse in Tibetan. So we start off with that dak up there, self. Then we have a ni. In this context, that ni is like a semicolon. And what this means is the subject of what follows is the self, and this is what it is, or is going to become through developing the good heart. So, what a novel idea. Thank you. So this is why His Holiness decided to spend 5 to 6 classes just talking about self, right? Because everything that was going to come after that was going to define the self in this new way that we're trying to get, you know, through the Lojong practice. Mainly to think of others before we think of ourselves. So what is the self that we're trying? We're changing the self to not think of self but of others first. The self is still going to be the self. So what on earth is the self? What's this?
Stift.
Somebody said?
Stift.
Stift. Stift. Stift. Pen. Okay, good. Is stift and pen the same thing?
In your hand, yes.
Some of you catch on quickly, but I'm not going to let you off. Is it the same thing or not? don't worry about that. That's too complicated. If this were self-existent as a pen, the self of the pen would be the pen, its nature. Okay, it has the nature of being a pen from its own side. So when we're talking about self, anything can have a self. These glasses have a self. The iPad has a self. And so on. Now, this does not have a self nature. Does it have a nature?
Yes.
You said yes.
I said yes.
It has a nature. Where does the nature come from?
Me.
Yeah, it comes from here. It's not a self nature. Now, what about what we think of ourselves as a self? We know that that doesn't come from itself. Do you know that?
Here, yes.
Here, yes. Right. In the lower school, in the Hinayana school, they don't talk about emptiness. They talk about selflessness. And that is the lack of the self-sufficient blah, 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 sort of self back here that controls what we do. That does not exist. There is it is there. What we know about our self comes from the way we treated others in the past, just like everything else does. It's a little more complicated than that, but we don't need to worry about how complicated it gets. It's sort of the way it is. So when we talk about self, we're talking about some nature that something has. You know, yeah, these glasses have the nature of being glasses. Their self is the glasses. And it doesn't make any difference whether it's a self-existent thing or a non-self-existent thing. The nature of the thing is the glasses. It's just as the self-existent nature. Anymore. And I say anymore because we're training ourselves to think that way, okay? The fact of the matter is it has never, ever been self-existent. And this self has never, ever been self-existent and never will be, is not now and never will be. So that's kind of the idea that we have when we're talking about self. So, turn on. So this fifth verse, dakla, dak is self, okay, or I or me, that works too. La is a particle meaning to, where something is, basically. So to me, shen is other and yi is a verb indicator, all right? So by me, or by other, trakdok is jealousy. And gi again is a verb indicator. So due to jealousy.
Why does that mean gi?
Ghee?
Why does that interrupt the ghee with ghee and not ghee?
Because I misspelled it.
Oh, okay.
You're absolutely right. The difference between... Okay, this is me to her right now. The difference between this and this, they're the same word, except they're spelled differently, and they're spelled differently due to what the letter in front of them is. It's a long technical word about that thing. But there are three or four G's this way. Without the sa at the end, gi, the same thing.
Thank you.
Okay. All right, going down. Shekor means, it's a verb, insult, to insult, or to verbally abuse, but it can also be a noun, just means an insult, right? It's not a nice word. A verbal abuse is not a nice thing. Lasok is short for lasokpa, which means etc., and so forth, and so on. And mirik hay is a term that means undeserved, or false, or untrue. Now let's go back and look at this. Some jealous person might do me wrong, insult me, or something of the like. There's nothing in there. Come on. There we go. And there about undeserved or false. Why? Because it wouldn't fit into the rhyme scheme. So we left it out. Now, we're going to talk about that. In other classes, I think we've talked about, unless I'm getting ahead of myself, what happens when something happens to you and it's not your fault? Somebody criticizes you and it's not your fault. Somebody blames you for something and it's not your fault. As opposed to somebody blaming you and it is your fault, right? You just don't like it. That's an important consideration, because when that happens, this self that comes up, the self-existent self that doesn't exist, but it appears anyway to us, right? Has a different quality, and it's a little bit more intense. And that is an excellent opportunity to take a look at what the self is in you. It's hard to do at the time. You can go home after it's happened and sit down and bring it up again and look at it. That works just fine. But this idea of it, that isn't my fault, you know, brings up a different self, and it's a good opportunity. So what we're looking at here, you know, when some jealous person, they're jealous of me, right? Might do me wrong, like insulting me when I don't deserve it, right? Or something of the like. May I learn to take the loss myself and offer them the gain? Here we go. So, say, Kyonka.
Kyonka.
Rangi.
Rangi.
Lenpa.
Lenpa.
Tang.
Tang.
Gyelka,
Shenla,
Ulwa,
Shok.
Yeah. The second interesting thing, as opposed to the Dakni that I started with, the first word, Konkya, of the verse, and then go down to the next line, Gyelka, they mean opposite things, but they've got the same sound at the end. Ka typically means mouth. I don't know, combined, you know, whether that holds or not. But it's an interesting thing, you know. To a Tibetan reading those, it'd be like reading Shakespeare or, you know, some really great poet that kind of tickles your ear with the way they use the language. And it's not translatable. I mean, we translated it literally, and the meaning is there, but this extra little isn't there. So when you're translating, sometimes it's kind of nice to add extra words or something, or maybe even change the meaning a little bit to get that kind of tickling thing. There's a translation of the Guide to the Bodhisattva's Way of Life that was done by Must have been a Nyingma man. I'm not sure about that. It's apparently, it says something or other, translation committee. I think the committee is one person. But the translation is, in English, is just music to our ears. It brings tears to my eyes. And Geshe-la doesn't like the translation because it's not accurate, which is okay. But sometimes, especially when you're talking about stuff having to do with a heart, you've got to use the language that does that best. So, no, translation is not an easy task. Even if you happen to know what you're doing, which I certainly don't. Okay, now, these second two lines are interesting. In Lojong practice, we have to distinguish between where insults come from and where the person that is insulting us comes from. We normally don't do that. Yeah, we know things come from ourselves, but we don't usually distinguish between the how and the why, or who's doing it and what's happening. And in Lojong, we have to begin to do that. We know that the person insulting us comes from us. They are a projection. They are empty, right? It's a blank screen that we're projecting an insulter onto. The insult comes because we've insulted somebody in the past. That's karma. So we're talking about understanding the karma and emptiness, two sides of the coin. Well, that's not true. Two different things that can't exist without each other, all right? We have to consider both of those. So doing this kind of thing, considering both of those factors, is sort of like applying the four forces of purification at the same time. You know, when we do our book, it's, you know, we do this, and we do this, and we do this, and we do this. Or when you're, you know, confessing or something at your altar or doing the four forces, you do them one at a time. This is sort of like applying those simultaneously. It isn't the same thing when we're thinking about this, but we're thinking about karma and emptiness at the same time. And this makes the practice more powerful. Where is the insulter coming from? Me. As a projection. Where is the insult coming from? Me, as a ripening result for something I've done in the past, which is also a projection. But there's nothing empty onto which you apply the insult. It's sort of there. Not literally true, but you've got to begin to think like that. Separate who's doing it from what's being done and consider them at the same time. Now, we're back here. May I learn to take the loss myself and offer them all the gain? Now, suppose somebody insults you. What is the very best thing that you can do to make sure that you're going to be insulted again?
Yeah,
insult them back, right? What's the opposite of insulting them back?
Praising them? Mm-hmm. To make him happy?
Well, yeah, you could do that. But that's not really the opposite.
Say yes, it's right.
Or yes, you're right. Yeah. Take the loss yourself.
But when we go back to the Tibetan, then the accurate translation would be let them win.
Let them win.
And present it as a gift to them. Is that, would that be the...
That's really good, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
And is it also to rejoice about a situation? If I rejoice about the negative karma?
Yeah. I mean, you'll get to the point where that begins to happen automatically. Right. And the rejoicing is that karma's gone. Yeah. I didn't get mad. I didn't replant the seed. One less. And you keep doing that, and eventually all the seeds disappear. Just like running out of gas.
But if the person is in an error, which maybe hurts them, and I let him win in the way that I say you're right, and I see maybe he will hurt himself, how can I let him win?
Because it doesn't make any difference whether you let him win or not. He's done the insult. He's collected the bad karma. Number one. Number two, when those seeds run out, they'll be unable to insult. They'll be unable to gather the bad karma. Why? Because they're projections of me.
There is a conflicting vow here. We have a bodhisattva vow that we need to explain at some point if people are talking wrongly or insulting us wrongly.
There's a thing about stopping rumors about yourself.
Yes,
absolutely right. But those have already happened also. And the person or persons doing the rumor spreading probably aren't present when you find out about it. But you're right, you have to do that. Again, what are we talking about here? We're talking about changing our minds. How do I develop this good heart? When the good heart's developed, these bad people aren't around anymore.
So the rumor thing is more what Roger said, that after a time, if the other person don't stop, try with skillful means to make him stop, that he does not longer
fight. Yeah.
It's also the bodhisattva vow that you have to explain to the person if it hurts himself.
That's
life,
true.
Yeah.
That's true. Now, so you do have a decision to make, right?
Yeah.
If you have bodhisattva vows, are any given instant, are you more concerned about what's happened to them, or are you more concerned about what's happening to you?
I think only when I have the instant reaction, which is pointed out here, that I take the loss and give them the gain, I can afterwards, after a period of time, think about how can I make him not to gain the bad karma again.
Right.
Out of love.
Yeah, that's good. We're working to being bodhisattvas. Of course, keeping your bodhisattva vows is one of the ways you become bodhisattvas. Oh my goodness, we have a problem here, or do we? That's why you have discussion groups. I saw other hands back here.
I had almost the same question, because I was, the role I have in mind has to do that the other person is angry about me, which is for me a little bit different than rumor is something, but if he's angry about me, he has emotional trouble.
Yep.
And I would like to release him more, and if I start to explain, I would hope that it settles him better. So it was almost the same question, yeah.
Well, try doing this.
Yeah.
If you say, you're right, they'll go. They won't know what on earth you've just done. You know, it may show them something. It may not. But the point of this is learning how to act differently. It's the same thing as turning the other cheek, right? You want people to stop hitting you? Turn the other cheek. As opposed to hitting them back. Do the opposite. Do the opposite that you normally do. That this non-existent, self-existent self always does. We got to protect. Okay. Yeah. You mentioned the offering part, which is absolutely right. Offer them the victory. Don't just give it to them, offer it to them by saying, yeah, you're right. Or you can just nod your head, which I think at the beginning is probably what we'll do. You're absolutely right. Yeah, you can't do that. So, we've begun to address this in your questions here. You may be thinking, you know, if I just roll over like a dog, you know, and let people take advantage of me, they'll keep on taking advantage of me, right? Why is this person taking advantage of me now? What's the best way to have them keep taking advantage of me? It isn't going over like a dog. It's fighting them back or trying to take advantage of them. Okay. This stupid machine. Got nothing to do with the operator. There may be times when I turn to someone with every hope that they'll help me, and instead they do me great wrong. May I see them as my holy guide? Okay, so here's the Tibetan. I say, Kangla. Daki.
Daki.
Pentakpe.
Pentakpe.
Rewa.
Rewa.
Chewa.
Chewa.
Gangshiki.
Gangshiki.
Right. Gi. Gi. Gi, 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 where are we? Here we are. So, Gangla means anyone at all. Daki, again, is by me. You know, I'm the doer. Pentak is to be helpful. Pentakpa, to be helpful. That funny thing at the end of the pa is just a connector. Yeah. Rewa is to hope, or just plain hope. Chewa is great. It's a nice adjective, great. Che and Chen and stuff like that are all the same kind of word. Lamrim Chenmo, the great Lamrim, all right, instead of Chewa. And then Gangshiki, and they, dot, dot, dot. If we can go on here. So say, how do we do this? Shendu?
Shendu.
No, sorry, that's Shendu.
Shendu.
Mirik.
Mirik.
Tujie.
Tujie.
Naang.
Naang.
Shenyan.
Shenyan.
Dampa.
Dampa.
Tawa.
Tawa.
Shok.
Shok.
Okay. This thing up there, screw you should be screw you, and that's the bad word, but that's what the Tibetan means. When somebody screws you, you know, screws you over, we say in English, does you bad, does bad things to you, and you've asked them for help. I mean, that's a pretty rotten response, you know. So what do you do? Why are they doing it? You've done the same thing before. What's the best thing to do to make sure it happens again? Well, you'll probably get angry at them, but but you know, somehow maybe you screw them over, especially if you look at them and just turn away and make plans to bring them harm, right? All right, I'm gonna get back at you, and you do it just perfectly. You know this saying, you probably have the same thing in German, revenge is a dish that's best served cold. That kind of thing. So this response, though, is even more difficult than the one in the previous verse, where somebody insults you and just give them the victory, right? You find yourself in a situation, you know, where you really need some help. And after a while, you swallow your pride and go ask somebody for help. It would be a friend, right? And you don't get help. They screw you over instead, right? So you take these people, according to this verse, to be a spiritual friend, meaning a spiritual teacher for you. They're teaching you something. In this case, it's extreme patience, you know, not getting angry when the time comes. This would be a place where that self is really, really apparent, or could be if you decided to take a look at it, right? We never take a look at it, we just respond to it. Or respond as if it were us, really. Which is kind of weird, but that's what we do. So the antidote to this thing that's happening to you is consider them to be a spiritual guide for you. Geshe-la, I think it was in the karma class. We were getting into antidotes to bad karma, you know. And we didn't have this verse yet because we hadn't had the class. But there's something similar in some other texts. And the idea was that, you know, when people do bad things to you, even little bad things, treat them as a friend, you know, as a teacher. So he said his students in New York developed this new insult for each other. You're my teacher. Didn't quite get the, you know, the message. But they did, really. Otherwise, you know, it wouldn't have happened. Oh, and the thing here is that you don't try to see them as your lama. You see them as your lama.
Yeah.
Okay. We're going to have lunch at 10. What's going on here? In brief, may I give all help and joy to my mothers, directly or some other way. May I take all the hurt and pain of my mothers in secret upon myself. Who are mothers here?
All living beings.
Everybody, yeah. One of the ways we begin to develop compassion when we think about becoming a bodhisattva is to think of the kindness to our mothers. Everybody in the universe has been our mother. How often?
countless
times. Gazillion times.
Gazillion is good. Countless is good. Infinite is good. Yeah. Gazillion is kind of nice because it's, oh God, that's a lot. Okay, so what do we have here? Say, Dorna.
Dorna.
Ngatang Gupa.
Ngatang Gupa.
Yi.
Yi.
Pende.
Pende.
Manam Kunla.
Manam Kunla.
Bool.
Yeah.
Dorna means in brief. In summary, you know, quickly, in brief. Ngatang Gupa means directly and indirectly. Yi is like yi, except it's used after vowels. Okay?
Yes.
Pende is help and happiness. Penpa dewa would be the full term. But you don't need those things at the end, so it's pende. Manam kunla is to all my mothers. And bool means to offer. Or to present as a gift. So what does all this mean? Every time I have the chance, I will take others' suffering in such a way that they don't know about it. Now, this could be Tonglen, if you know that practice. I will do the suffering for them. That's the attitude you have. Directly might be like breaking into people's houses and putting money in their wallets. Indirectly, would be, I don't know, telling somebody else to praise them, something like that. Things like that. You could put food in their refrigerator directly. Unusual things like that. They don't know that you're doing it. You do it in secret. You aren't going to brag about how helpful you are to other people. Because that brings it back to me, the self that doesn't exist. Very, very bad karma to do that. So we do it in secret. Any questions about that verse? I don't know why it's so straightforward. These are supposed to be in code or something. Verse 8. May none of this ever be made impure by the eight ideas of things. May I see all things are illusion and free myself from the chains of attachment. All right, let's take a look at this. Dedak.
Dedak.
Kunkyang.
Kunkyang.
Chögye.
Chögye.
Topa.
Topa.
Trima.
Trima.
Bak. Right. Dedak, de means this, dak is a plural. So all these things, something like that. All these things that we've been talking about is what this refers to. Whenever you see de in Tibetan, it refers to something up above. It may be just the previous thing, it may be everything, or some number of things. that's one of the challenges of translating Tibetan. What's it referring to? So all these things we've been talking about, kunkyang, it means all of these. Chögye, chö means dharma, and gye means eight. So the eight dharmas, which we'll talk about a little bit as soon as I finish the rest of this. Tokpa means an idea, a concept. A different version of this means realization. This isn't the realizations. It's just an idea or concept. Tree means stain. Uh, It can't mean stain. It must be stainless. Okay, tree ma means stain, not stainless. Okay, ma in this case is a negative. Stain or impurity. And pak means to pollute or defile or to be made impure. So what we're talking about here, may none of this, may none of what we've just been talking about ever be made impure by the eight ideas of things. So let's see what those eight are. The commentaries explain that the eight ideas, or the eight dharmas, really, the eight dharmas, can refer to two things. One of them is the eight worldly thoughts, which we've had before. And another one is the eight ways of seeing things in, as self-existent. And our commentator says the eight dharma in this case means both of those. All right. So let's go over these. You've had them before, and you're going to have them again for a while. Do I have these in the... I do. Here we go. Say jikten.
Chugye.
Jikten.
Chugye.
Jikten.
Chugye.
What's jikten?
World.
Both. World. For you new people, jikten literally means basis, like the foundation, the basis of rot, of destruction. That's the Tibetan translation of the word loka in Sanskrit. It's loka, right? I hope it's loka. I'm pretty sure it's loka. But some word that means world. In both Sanskrit and Tibetan, the world is a lousy place. There's nothing good about it. And understanding that is what we call renunciation. All right. So the eight worldly thoughts. Chö is dharma, or you could say thought, and get, again, is eight we had before. So here's the first one. Say nekyur.
Nekyur.
Chungnaka.
Chungnaka.
Being happy when you get something. Oh, I got my espresso. The world is fine. Is there anything wrong with that thought?
No.
What makes it wrong?
Ignorant desire.
Ignorant desire. Explain that.
It means that you don't won't be happy if you don't have the coffee, and if you don't have it, you want it so bad that it makes you do things to others that hurt them.
And the only reason I would think that would be...
Because you think that coffee exists from its own side.
Right. This will make me happy.
But you're trying to protect and what you've got.
And get.
Yeah, I'm trying to make this self happy.
Somebody
yeah.
wants to take...
Especially if I'm in a foul mood or it's cold outside or something like that. I make those noises, but I understand where this comes from, which means I can make those noises. Right. Yeah, being happy when you get something. The something exists from its own side. And if that makes you happy, and it's the only way you can be happy, then that's in one of the eight worldly thoughts, based on this basis of rot. All right? This is, if it exists on its own side. Number two, machumna mika.
Machumna mika.
Yeah. Being upset when we don't get something we want. Like the bus not coming on time.
True.
True.
Never thought of that.
Or the person next to you who gets the raise and you don't. You know. Or I call on somebody else when you have the answer. for the first time. No, things like that. Being unhappy, there's no excuse for that at all. All right. I mean, we do get unhappy. No excuse for it. You can be unhappy at mental afflictions. There's nothing wrong with that. I mean, that's a good thing. But being unhappy because you don't get something like a cup of coffee when you want it, and that makes you unhappy, is stupid. Why don't you get the cup of coffee?
Because you didn't give it to somebody else.
Yeah.
The espresso machine is
broken.
The espresso machine's broken. Why is the espresso machine broken? What's the best thing to do?
Call the maintenance company. We are on vacation.
We try so hard. All right, let's go on. Dewa Chungnaka.
Dewa Chungnaka.
Right. Being happy when you feel good. Is there anything wrong with that?
No.
No? What if we read this to say being happy only when you feel good? Or let's go on to the next one. Machungna Mika.
Machungna Mika.
Being unhappy when we don't feel good.
I have a question because for me it's something which is the opposite of the coffee meditation. So I feel happy in the evening about good things happening in my life. But when you say this, it means it's not the right thing of the world.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yep. Coffee meditation is to reactivate good karma that you've done during the day. Mm-hmm. Rejoicing, basically. Yeah. Geshe-la says when you rejoice at something good you've done or anybody else has done, you get 10% of that karma. Even though you haven't done it, you're just happy about it. I think it's more like 50, and at times I think it's 100%. But you have to, in order for that to work, you've got to understand karma and emptiness very, very deeply. Yeah. Which is one reason these teachings are delayed until the end of the whole 15 courses. You need to have a good foundation in the rest of the teachings. Which I'm happy to say, as far as I can tell, all of you do. Even when you don't answer my dumb questions. all right, so being unhappy when we don't feel good. Bodhisattvas don't call in sick. Got that?
Okay.
Yeah, we're bodhisattvas regardless of how we might feel. Happy or sad. We should be happy all the time. Why? Because we're helping others. Even if we have a cold. You know, what's the cold from? Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, you know, figure it out. But there's... It's only because of the way we treated people in the past, and we're trying to remove that behavior, right? Those bad things that we do, because we think of other people incorrectly, because we think of ourselves first and not others first. Okay. These ought to be 5, 6, 7, and 8, but this stupid program won't let you begin a new numbers sequence on a new page, so.
Mm-hmm.
stupid. Oh my goodness, what did I say?
I would like to go back to the being happy when you feel good.
Right.
Can we go there a little bit deeper?
Yes.
I have the feeling.
Would you like to do that?
No. I want to understand.
Right.
Isn't it about when I would have thought it's about the emptiness, you know, you can feel good and you can be happy about it. And if you understand you are happy because you made other people happy, and you see the emptiness of your happiness, then that would be good. You know, then that's fine. If you don't think, oh, I'm happy, and because, you know, you don't see the self-existence, then that would be okay to feel happy when you feel good?
Absolutely. So, what are we talking about? Worldly thoughts, meaning here, you're happy when you feel good. That is self-cherishing. Taking care of me first.
Yeah. You're ready to hurt somebody, maybe.
To get the happiness.
To continue.
Yeah. 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 Yeah, like taking the last piece of chocolate cake. Yeah. Or the first. Espresso cup that comes out of the thing, yeah, something like that.
But all this, I would, to be honest, I would put to the first one, being happy when I get something.
You could do that too. But getting has to do with getting things. Mm-hmm. Feeling good has to do with feeling good. As opposed to being happy about because you got something. You just feel good. You wake up. Sun shining, birds are singing.
What's bad about it?
Everything's right with the world. I feel happy. Without considering. That's just self-cherishing.
Okay.
The next thought would be, and I wish everybody else felt this happy too.
And in this way, it's okay to feel happy.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, that's... For me, it's not really...
when you really think about it, the purpose of Buddhism is to feel happy.
Yeah.
You know? Is to be happy. I mean, that's all. You know? I mean, we want to get enlightened, true, which will make us really, really happy. But, yeah. Yeah, we don't want to suffer. Nobody wants to suffer. God. Okay. Nedrak.
Nedrak.
Chungnaka.
Chungnaka.
Mm-hmm. Being happy if we become well known. It's Andy Warhol or somebody's 15 minutes of happiness, everybody of fame. Everybody gets that. Or was it 10 minutes? I don't know. Something like that. Everybody, just 10 minutes of fame would be really nice. Be on the news at night. Doesn't make any difference what you've done. Just, you know, be happy. This is really a dangerous thing for teachers, by the way. You know, you get well known and, yeah. Yeah, where do I teach next, you know? That kind of thing. And which is self-cherishing as opposed to wanting to help people. And being unhappy, I'll say, machumna,
machumna,
mika.
Mika.
Right, being unhappy when you're not well-known, especially if you've been well-known for a while. You know, I mean, you think about it, being unhappy when you're not well-known, who cares? Nobody else cares about it. Why are you so unhappy? And finally, Tura Chumnaka. Being happy when you're praised. Oh, well, sure. Why not? You know? Again, it's the self-cherishing part. I deserve this. You know, it makes me happy. It isn't because I've praised somebody else in the past. It's because I deserve it. And the praise is self-existent. And the person that gave it to me is self-existent. This is the worldly side of things, right? And then the opposite, say, machonna. Being unhappy when you don't get it. The noun, the praise, isn't in this phrase. We take it from the previous one. Okay. Any questions about those? Aren't we going to do the eight other things?
Can I say it's all about a grasping to
something? Yeah, this grasping business. Is always there, you know, because the appearance is what we believe. It comes from its own side. And we just grab onto that without knowing it. We don't know that we grasp, that we cling to the self-existence of things, even though it's a mistaken image, a mistaken appearance. We just don't know we're doing it. It's habit. For how many? A gazillion? Two gazillion. Years, all right? Eons, how about that? We don't even know it. And it takes a lot of work to turn that around, which is why we study it and which is why I keep harping at it all the time. You know, you get tired of hearing me do it, or maybe you don't, I don't know. When you get tired of hearing me do it, you're making progress. And then when I stop doing it, and you've made more progress and want to hear it more because you don't want to let it go, slip away. All right. Why are we jumping to verse 8? Well, I have this out of order. Here are the eight. They're called the eight extremes. That's in the next class. I'm going to do them anyway. Oh, this is the other side of the eight dharmas. All right, the eight ways of seeing things improperly as self-existent. All right, so say tagya. Nomo drupa. Tagya means ta is at extreme, to the edge, something like that, and gya is
eight.
So the eight extremes. Lolo Drupa, is an idea that things have their own essence, have their own nature, so self-nature. So this is self-existent, all right? Lolo means it's sort of like essence, but it's like a nature, all right? In fact, that is the word, nature. Nomo is nature. And drupa means to be established as, which is too many English words, so self-nature works really, really good. Established as having a nature. Okay, so let's go through these. Say kewa.
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 Things start from their own side. What does this mean? It means that things things have a nature of their own, a self-nature, all right? Now, the beginning of Arya Nagarjuna is fundamental wisdom, or fundamental wisdom of the middle way, or whatever that is. Sometimes it's a long title, sometimes it's just a short title. But he says, I've taught you this in Tibetan before, and you're going to get it again. Repeat. Daklemen.
Daklemen.
It's not that. Daklemayen.
Daklemayen.
Shenlemen.
Shenlemen.
Gilemayen.
Gilemayen.
Gumemen.
Gumemen.
Okay. Dak is...
Self.
More than one person answered. That's really nice. Dakle, le means from. Ma yin, it isn't. Things don't come from themselves. Shen le min. Things don't, shen means other. Things don't come from something else. Nyi means two or both. Nyi le mayin. Things don't come from both, meaning itself or something else. And yumeimin, things don't exist without cause. Nothing exists without cause. Things don't exist without cause. Right. Now.
Come from neither.
Yeah, come from neither. Either.
Therefore, right.
They don't come from either.
From either. That works too. No. You may. You is without cause. Yeah, things don't come from either. That's pretty. No, that's both. Things don't exist without cause. All right. Or nothing exists without cause. Things can come from themselves, or they can come from something else. These are two ways that things might exist, all right? And you take two things, and in Tibetan logic, you can have four possibilities. If you have A and B, you could have A and not B. You could have B and not A. You can have A and B. You can have not A and not B. Those are the four possibilities. And when you're discussing something, you're taking a look at which of those four possibilities is there. But in this case, Arya Nagarjuna is saying that none of those is true, meaning nothing exists. And that's the first line of his text, and he spends the rest of the text explaining what that means in great detail. But he's saying, you know, it's not true that things don't exist. We know that, right? So what does it mean? It means that things don't exist the way we think they do. And when he goes on throughout the text, it becomes obvious that it is not possible to speak in a sane way about our existence. We cannot describe it in a coherent way. If it is true what he said, then it must be the case that nothing exists. And he goes on to say that that's because nothing has a nature of its own, which we can accept. But as he goes, he takes time, he takes karma, he takes the 12 links of dependent origination, he takes compassion. He takes the 12 links of, did I say that already? The Four Noble Truths, the Four Truths of Aryas. Every field, every topic that Buddhism talks about and says it's not true. Meaning that it's not true from its own side.
Third turning of the wheel? Is that the third turning of the wheel? Yes.
No.
No, it's mind only.
No. His text is the basis for the Middle Way School. But it became, well, people didn't understand it. It just threw him for a loop. Shortly after
Master Rasanga wrote Abhisamya Alamkara, which was more understandable. He brought it down from Tushita, Maitreya's heaven. And that became the mind-only school, even though it was also talking middle way. The Indian commentary that is used as a commentary in the monasteries of Abhisamya Alamkara is written from a Swatantrika, the lower middle way school point of view. We're getting off here. Anyway, he said things don't start from their own side. Nothing comes from its own side. We think that it does. We think this appears to be self-existent and we buy into it. The yelling boss is self-existent. We buy into that. He may be not self-existent and coming from us when we're not thinking about him or when he's saying nice things to us or medium nice things, you know. If he's bawling out our coworker that we don't like, then he's a self-existent avenging angel, right? We don't feel sorry for the coworker at all, or him, for a matter of fact, for generating the bad karma. So this is one way that we see things as self-existent. They start from their own side. Now, something that's self-existent cannot start. It's already there and has always been there and will always be there. There is no outside cause to change it. Therefore, it cannot be changed. And therefore, it's always been. There could not be a time when there was a cause that this didn't exist and there was a cause to make it come into existence. That would not be possible. The cause would have to be the thing itself. Okay, number two, say kakpa. 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 Things stop from their own side. Mm-hmm. Well, things are changing, and that could stop, right? Meaning that I could break this pen. And he says, that's not correct either. They don't stop from their own side. They cannot stop. The pen exists only in dependence upon itself. How could the pen ever cause itself to not be a pen? Its nature is a pen. This nature can never be not pen. Mm-hmm. Say takpa.
Takpa.
Takpa. Takpa means unchanging. So we view this as unchanging. It exists from its own side, therefore it's unchanging. It exists because of its own causes. It's never anything but a pen. Ever, ever, ever. It's unchanging. Are there unchanging things?
Yes.
Yeah, couple. Emptiness is one of them, right?
Empty space.
Ideas, facts are another. They're unchanging. They come in and out of existence, but they don't change. They're not there due to causes, is another way to put this. And four, things don't exist at all. Woo-hoo, say chepa.
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 Things don't exist at all. Well, that's the conclusion from the thing one, two, and three, but that's not true either. Things do exist. So that's the first four. Oh, I got this to start with five. How did I do that? Fluke. All right. Say droa.
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 Things go. What does that mean? Things An example is right. Here's a corn seed, right? Got that?
Mm-hmm.
Corn seed. Imagine. The corn seed goes into a corn plant. Now, does a corn sprout come from a corn seed?
No.
No.
Yes.
Explain.
A corn seed and a corn sprout are different things. So one cannot be the cause for the other. And the other cannot be the result from the corn. The sprout cannot be the result from the corn.
Oh my goodness, why? Why do you plant a corn seed to get a corn stalk? I mean, you could use this. This is, well, I'm going to eat it. You
know. On the timeline, it might look like that the seed causes the sprout.
Isn't that true?
No.
No.
Depends on which school we are talking.
This is one of the things that Arya Nagarjuna means when we can't discuss our world in the same way. This go here has to do with the fact that the corn seed itself transforms into the corn sprout. And this would mean that the substance of the corn seed becomes the corn sprout. Now we don't get to lick them.
Thank you.
And that can't happen. But the substance of the corn seed becomes the corn sprout. Now, do the atoms, they do that. But it seems like if we were to like put a corn seed like in an ant colony between two pieces of glass and dirt in there, and were to watch it, we could watch it become a sprout. And it seems like that the seed transforms into the sprout. The substance transforms into the sprout, but it's a self-existent substance. And if it were self-existent, it could not happen. But he's saying things don't go like that. As being an extreme thought, meaning this is a wrong thought. So what he's saying is the appearance is not true. Does a seed of corn properly planted, watered, and fertilized and given light become a corn sprout? Yeah, it does. It doesn't become a horse, for example. Or a blue corn seed doesn't become a yellow corn sprout. I'd say that too. So things don't go, meaning self-existently. The self-existent seed doesn't go into a self-existent sprout. Things don't come is the opposite. Where'd that go? Oh, come on. Say Ongwa.
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 Ongwa. Ong means to come. So the corn sprout doesn't come out of the corn seed. And out of doesn't mean removed from. It means transformed from. It looks like it does, but it's not the case if that's true. That is an extreme view. Extreme meaning that it things exist from their own side. Things are eternal is another way to put it. All right. Things are unchanging. Things are permanent. All those nice adjectives. And say chick.
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 Chick means?
One.
One. Chick.
Oh.
We just had it. Dak Le Ma Yin. Shen Le Min.
Shen.
Yi.
Yi.
Yi, right.
Three jewels? The three jewels?
Ah, good.
Yeah.
Well, what are they?
Tibetan for it.
Kunchok.
Kunchok.
Is very supreme.
Soom.
Soom. Ah. Like pulling teeth. All right, things are one. Now, the next one is many. Say tade.
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 Tade. Tade.
In Tibetan logic, the young monks go in something one or is it something many? Is something one or is it many? Is this one?
Yeah.
Oh, no, boy.
This is many.
Is it many? If it's not one, does it have to be many?
If it's not one, it cannot be many.
Yeah.
That's the,
yeah.
If it is not one, it cannot be many.
Right. So, is it one? We're getting no. Two no's, three no's.
Yes, it's one.
Yes, it's one. All right. Anybody else want to check in here? We don't have an electric chair or anything. If you don't. Suppose I had a box full of these. All right, and you're seeing a box full. One or many? Oh dear, we already said this wasn't one.
One box.
This is another one of those things that the young monks just love, and they'll argue all night long sometimes, something one or many. If it isn't one, it can't be many. But what about this box of pens? Isn't it many? You know, well, things aren't one and things aren't many. Things are one and things are many is an extreme view. Meaning that if we look at this as a pen, then it has to be one pen. It has to be a self-existent pen. Do you believe that? Suppose we understand this is not a self-existent pen, but it's coming from us. Is it one or many? Don't answer all at once. Okay.
No, it has many parts.
Some of its parts.
It has many parts, but the parts aren't the pen.
The pen isn't the sum of its parts.
The pen isn't the sum of its parts. Do you know anybody not know that argument? That it's an argument. Is the pen the sum of its parts? Is this a pen?
Yes.
Conventionally?
Conventionally, yes.
Is this a pen?
No.
Oh, boy, good. Isn't this the sum of its parts? Without the paper underneath?
It's a sum of its parts, but it's not a pen.
But it's not a pen, is it? In when this is starting out, the example was Shinta?
Shinta.
Oops. They use Shinta. What's a Shinta?
Thing. Thing? A thing?
Well, it's a thing, but it means something in particular. Suppose I say that Shing means wood. Which it does. That's one of the meanings. What's a Shinta? How about I say horse?
What does ta mean?
Shinta?
Ta, many things.
Ta means many.
Oh, not this ta.
Is that the question?
Okay. Yeah. The spelling is RTA, which means horse. So a wooden horse would be
Shinta.
A Shinta would be. How would you know? That's what it was called in India, by the way. Wooden horse.
A train?
No.
A train. And during Buddha's time.
A wagon.
Good. Or a chariot. Yep. A wooden horse. So they, all right, here is a chariot. Is this a chariot? Yes. But it's got parts. Okay. If it has parts, then we can't say it's self-existent because it has parts. And you argue about that, but eventually, if anything that has parts has to be a changing thing and therefore not self-existent. It exists due to causes and conditions. All right, so you take the wagon apart, you got all the parts there, but it's not a chariot. The parts are all there. Suppose you had a master stonecutter come and carve a chariot. And it's sitting there, it looks exactly like a chariot. Is it a chariot?
No.
Because
it doesn't function.
It can't function as a chariot. Mainly the wheels can't turn. Well, I guess a horse could drag it, but the horse would be unhappy after a while. So we have some of the parts, all this lovely stuff. But the one and many argument has to do, the supposition is that everything in the universe is either one or many. So you have to decide when you're considering something, is it one or many? And if you cannot say and prove that it's at least one, then it can't exist the way we think it exists. If something could be one, then it could be many too, like the box of pens, all right? But they'd have to be self-existent pens. Now, this may seem trivial, elementary, put a good childish way to think of things. But in Buddhism, whenever that happens, it's a signal that is very profound. And in fact, we use the one and many argument to disprove the self-existence of things. That's one of the ways that we do it. We need lots of ways to do it. But that's one of the many ways. In the Galukpa school, in the Middle Way school, especially, well, even the Mind Only school, we need lots and lots and lots of proofs of things. Okay.
So, conventionally said, it's either one or many.
Mm-hmm.
Conventionally. But we prove that it can't be one with our proofs because it has parts of something, so it can't be many.
If it can't be one, then it can't be many.
Mm-hmm.
But it could be many. It could be one. But if it isn't one, then it can't be many. So are those three possibilities? Something like that. There's three possibilities and four possibilities in Buddhist logic, which is course 13. How many have had 13? You're all alive. That's remarkable. The rest of you have it to look forward to.
The emptiness of the pen exists. So is it a correct conclusion that there are many emptinesses of pens if I have a box of pens?
If you say that each of the pens in the box has its own emptiness, that is a correct statement.
Can you clarify if you assume that every pen has its own emptiness? Please clarify.
If I had two pens here, each pen would have its own emptiness.
Mm-hmm.
We each have our own emptiness of self and arm and all that stuff. Yes. When the pen goes out of existence, there's no emptiness of pen because there's no pen. The pen is a changing thing. Why? Number of reasons. It's produced. Anything that's produced is a changing thing. Anything that is a changing thing comes from causes and conditions and so on. The pen is a changing thing. The emptiness of the pen is not. The pen does not cause the emptiness of the pen.
Mm-hmm.
The emptiness of the pen is dependent upon the pen. It is not produced by the pen. The yelling boss depends on my karma. The yelling boss is, oh boy. I was going to say produced by my karma, but that's not true. Is the yelling boss a changing thing?
The yelling boss
changing thing
is only possible because the boss has its own emptiness. Has its own emptiness.
Yes, right. So, can my karma produce the boss?
Yeah.
Got to be careful.
It can produce the perception.
Explain that to everybody.
The boss is empty, so there is something there, forms and colors. And it could be anything. But if I have the karma to see him as an unpleasant yelling boss, because I was unpleasant and yelling to somebody else, then this whatever there is, form and shape thing, becomes a yelling boss.
I liked your first explanation better.
So, can I debate?
Uh-huh.
So, you assume that the form and shapes are self-existent.
Depending on which school we are in.
Which school you are in your explanation?
In a lower school.
Mm-hmm.
The yelling boss is not self-existent.
No.
The yelling boss is not self-existent.
True.
The question was if the color and shapes are self-existent. So can you reframe it according to
the colors and shapes being self-existent were an escape clause to a previous statement.
Let's say there is something there. There is something there.
Yeah, well, your first answer was the one. My karma is a mental thing. It's part of the mind, all right? The yelling boss is a physical thing. A mental thing doesn't produce a physical thing. Not possible. But your comment was the perception of the yelling boss. And that is a mental thing.
Again, perception of the yelling boss.
Trying to make a question.
If I say in my mind, this is a yelling boss, then it comes from me. I can say in another way, he only speaks loud. And is this the thing, what comes from me? If I say the yelling boss speaks loud, I say he speaks loud because my father only is yelling. Also ich denke, der scheinende Chef, der spricht nur laut und jemand anders denkt, er schreit, also er ist böse im Sinne.
I think the yelling boss is only as speaking loudly, somebody else thinks he is yelling at him. And what's the question?
Yeah, und das kommt von meinem Geist, und das ist mein Karma, oder?
And that's from my mind, and that's my karma.
Yep.
Ob ich sage, er spricht nur laut, oder er ist halt ein böser Chef.
If I think he's speaking loudly, or if I think he's a bad boss, that's my karma.
That's right. Okay. That's right. The perception, whatever perception you have of the boss, whether he's yelling, insulting, loud, avenging angel of somebody else, is due to your karma.
Okay, if I produce the mental image of a bus and the bus is running me over and I'm dead, is it a mental picture, the bus?
Running you over? As long as you're alive, yes.
No, I'm dead.
When you die, then there's no more mental picture. And so the karma for the bus is gone. It's finished.
But the bus hurt me physically.
It's okay. That's a projection. It doesn't mean it isn't real.
Is it the same projection as from the beamer?
From
the projector?
From the projector.
Like this?
Yes.
Well, it's an easy analogy to make. If you include all the qualities that you put on the boss, the answer I think would be yes. It's more than just a visual image. I mean, it is a visual image, but it's more than that. The visual image doesn't yell. So you're projecting a boss you can see, you're projecting a boss you can hear, or the voice you can hear, and any other qualities there. If he's in your face and yelling and spitting at you, you're projecting something else in addition to that. But those are projections.
And it's my karma that the bus überfährt mich, runs me over.
Yep.
And it's my projection.
Yep.
Okay. Like the projectors, the paint, the
a blank screen.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. There's nothing there. This is in the very highest school. And the next lower, well, the lower half of the middle way school, there's got to be something here.
And they say, if there wasn't, then the yelling boss could never exist. They say, yeah, we understand that it comes from my karma, you know, that I have to say there's a yelling boss in order for there to be a yelling boss. But there has to be, another way to put it, yelling boss is a label put on something. There has to be something in this school to put the label on, like yelling boss. Otherwise, the yelling boss could not exist. They cannot make the jump that our karma can totally produce our world, and does, as a matter of fact.
Is it the mind-only school?
The mind-only school, everything happens in the mind. There's nothing out here.
It's matrix.
Yeah, everything is within here. And they'll say that, yeah, mind and body are different. They're not the same thing, but still, it's in a confined space, or at least a defined space, even though the space not being what we call space. But yeah, it's a lonely place to be. But they survive. Somebody asked His Holiness, how can a mind-only person ever perceive emptiness directly, since their view of things is wrong? Mm-hmm. And he said, when they get to the point, when they've sat down on the cushion to have a direct perception of emptiness, that they become prasangika, mm-hmm. that they make that jump, finally.
One more question. So if the mind only, everything is happening in the mind, everything is mental, then in the prasangika, we say that we create the physical stuff and the picture we put on the physical stuff. Is that the correct conclusion?
You can say that. But basically, in the prasangika school, we project things, well, to be in here and to be out there. Mm-hmm. Because we project things to be out there, they are. Mm-hmm. Because they are. I mean, this isn't in me. You know, I don't care what anybody says, it ain't. All right. That is outside, it is real because it is a projection. Does it exist out here? It does. And the reason it does is because it's a projection. Why? Because that's the only way that it could exist. And this comes after lots and lots of debate in the debate ground. You know, it's hard to accept that for a while. And the worst thing for me was, when you become a Buddha, you have no more seeds for suffering. You don't perceive suffering anymore, because you don't have the seeds for it. Then how does a Buddha help me? Yeah, you know? A friend of mine and I came to blows over that once. I just couldn't make that understanding. How can the Buddha help me?
Teach me.
Well, yeah. But if they don't know I'm suffering.
The question is, how can they see me?
Suffering.
They cannot see suffering anymore because they're so pure. Oh. So how can they see me? I've asked myself the same question. You have an answer?
I do.
Oh, good.
But I'm not going to tell you. We're going to talk about it a while.
I think, or I believe the Buddha sees the end after suffering.
Say again?
The Buddha sees, now I am suffering.
Uh-huh.
You say the Buddha don't see my suffering.
They have no seeds to perceive suffering.
Yes, but my suffering goes away sometimes.
Yeah.
And the Buddha sees our whole life. And I think mm-hmm. in the end of our life, we have no seeds for suffering. Perhaps the Buddha sees us perfect in the end of our life.
We have to go a little bit beyond perhaps. Yeah, you're right. I mean, the Buddhas, they do help us. But if they have no seeds for suffering themselves in order to perceive it.
They see us on the whole time. They see how we get there.
You see how we get there, okay.
We just learned in class 4 that the Buddha perceives all things in their deceptive reality as well as in their ultimate reality. And they see all things. So they don't have to see, they see us perfectly because they cannot see suffering, but they do see the deceptive reality as well as ultimate reality.
I think that's true. How can that be? This is a question.
Because they're omniscient.
It's also my perception of a Buddha, because as long as I'm in the suffering room, I see the suffering and I can perceive the Buddha seeing suffering.
Seeing me suffering.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's where we come to this. We create our own doctors, basically. Which is kind of miraculous when you think about it. Do you believe that?
Sure.
Would it be nice if it was that way?
The only way.
Yeah, we have to really keep going over this stuff. You know? It's a very sophisticated understanding that this is a projection and it is real. It's coming from me. There is no other way it exists. So things are real because they are projections. That last step, you gotta cook. And then you'll realize that it makes absolute sense. I mean, it's kind of an inverse logic. But if the cup can't exist any other way, then there is no cup. Is it a fact there is no cup here?
No self-existent. No self-existent. Yeah, no self-existent.
Well, let's say conventional cup. Is it a fact there's no cup here? That's true, there is no cup?
No,
there's a cup. There's a cup. It exists. I can bang you over the head with it and you will say, ow. Get that cup away from me. You won't say, get that feather duster away from me or whatever, right? It's undeniable there's a cup here. And if you have convinced yourself that the only cup here comes from you, or me, the only way it can exist is as a projection. Dot, dot, no, what? Mm-hmm. Three dots, right? Mm-hmm. It exists because it is a projection. It's real because it is a projection. We've long ago left this idea that it's not self-existently real. That's kindergarten Buddhists, right? Even though it still comes up, but we know that. God, we're going to have to wait until 12 for lunch after all. Okay, so verse 8, do we have verse 8? Here we go. This, may none of this ever be made impure by the 8 ideas of things. May I see all things as illusion and free myself from the chains of attachment. This verse applies to the previous 7. We've learned things about how we are to view others and view ourselves in relationship to others. We're changing our mind. And now he's telling us, who's he?
Chamundan.
Diamond Lion, right.
By Dorje Senge, right? Whose dates are roughly?
1400.
Earlier. 1047 to something. 11th century. So the 1400 is what?
I knew it yesterday.
17th, yeah. What's the 1400 thing? You're getting there. Mu Chen something or other, who wrote the compendium, which is a collection of about 100 Lojong texts, of which this is one. So that's where the 1400 comes in. And Shakya Rinpoche wrote a commentary that we use. It's not often in the text. Sometimes it is, but the commentary is there. All right, so we went through the eight dharmas, and we're being told that we don't want to pollute these teachings that came before, these previous seven verses, with the eight dharmas, right? Either set, the eight worldly dharmas or the eight misperceptions of things of self-existent. He's telling us that we have to draw a line. We learn how to apply these teachings in the first seven verses. And now we have to guard ourselves to not ever let those minds be polluted by self-cherishing, basically. The eight worldly dharma, any of them, and the eight ways of misperceiving things. Draw a line in the sand. This is where I stand. I'm not ever going to go back to the way things were. And you just have to do that. When your boss yells at you, thank you. And never let yourself go back to the old way of yelling back or feeling anything like that. By the way, this idea of giving the other person the victory isn't this, we use the term roll over like a dog. Well, that's not what it's about. You just offer. Yeah, you're right. You've got to do that. And don't let the other stuff ever come up in your mind. And that's hard to do. And you'll fail, expect it to do, but that's why we got the books. If you draw the line in the sand, then you're watching what you do all the time. I hope line in the sand makes, it's an English phrase, you probably know what I'm talking about, Okay. I think that's it. Any more comments, questions?
Bukhi Drukshin Metok Tram Rirab Lingshi Yende Yen Pari Sangye Shingdu Mite Uvargi Drogun Nanda Shingha Chuparsho Guru Ratna Mandala Kam Niyantayami Diyya Vokun Sunam Yashe Tok Tok Shing Sanam yashe le jung we dampa kunyi to par shou.